Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
And welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. And, you know, this evening things are a little different than they have been. We don't have the full crew, the full complement this evening. Miles, as you guys know, is off at his honeymoon. JR is off at dinner with his fiance. But I do have Saxy Prince here with you. What's going on, Yinka?
What's going on, y'all? Saxy Prince here. You know, doing what I do.
And we have a special guest for you guys today. We have the czar of the playbook, the founder, CEO, leader extraordinaire of football game plan, Mr. Emery Hunt. How's it going, Emery?
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, as is the tradition on all of our episodes of the Climbing the Pocket podcast, we usually get things going with Yinka. Kind of breaking the ice for us with a little question, little random question of the day. So, Yinka, fire away. What's the question that you have for us today?
It was taking me a second to think about this, but then, you know, given the world that we live in today, and we've seen all these max contracts in the NBA and, you know, NFL people sign new deals and whatnot. So I was thinking about it. If you guys received $1 million, what would be some of your first couple purchases? I'll start. My first couple purchases is I pay off my parents' house, I buy myself a new car, I buy my parents a new car, and then I would just put the rest in, you know, some kind of a savings account to like only be touched or slightly invest so that it can make more money. That would be what I would do.
Okay. How about you, Emery? If you won $1 million, I guess what would be the first thing you were doing with it?
Oh man, that's a dope question. I would say I would probably buy property up here to build, let's say, football game plan studios, bigger football game plan studios, so that way I can create more opportunities for everybody to come in and keep spitting that truth.
That is awesome. I like that. I like that. And for me, I think that my mom and I were actually talking about it today, joking about getting ourselves a compound for the whole family where everyone can have their own wing. So I think that's what that'd be my first purchase, a big old brown compound where, you know, every wing of the family can have their own part of the property to live on. So now we got that out of the way. Emery, you are our guest. I hope, or at least I would think that most of the people who are listening would know about you or should be following you on Twitter. But for those who maybe don't or haven't, could you give us a little bit of an introduction?
Well, not a problem, man. I started Football Game Plan back in 2007. Actually, it'll be 10 years come August that we started Football Game Plan. And, you know, it's been fun. We started initially as a website, started to add video in 2009. I think we were one of the first ones to jump on YouTube. And that's sort of how we got bigger as far as what we were able to provide for the folks. But my background, born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana, played college football at Louisiana Lafayette. I'm sorry, University of Louisiana. I just want to needle those guys at LSU and U of Monroe, but University of Louisiana. And afterwards, I coached high school ball, jumped into corporate America. After Katrina hit, moved up here to Jersey, North Jersey, right outside of New York City, and continued to do what I was doing at the time, motivational speaking, recruiting. Decided that, you know, I wanted to get back into football, started Football Game Plan at the same time, and boom, here we are.
Well, that is awesome, man. You do great work, and anyone who's listening to this, if you don't already follow Emery, please do so. They're doing great work at Football Game Plan. A lot of stuff there on YouTube for you to check out. And Emery actually wrote a very interesting article, and it's an article that dovetails with something we talked about very briefly on a previous episode, and it was talking about a developmental league for the NFL. And so when I obviously saw that we were having the conversation, then Emery wrote the article, reached out to see if we could get him on to have a discussion and get his input on, you know, what a developmental league might look like, what the benefits would be, and how that would all be set up. So with that lead in, I'll turn it over to you, Emery, and I guess you can let us know.
Yeah, without bogging you guys down with all the intricate details, but I will say this. I started writing that article at 7:30 Saturday morning. By the time I hit submit, it was 11:40. I'm like, man, my goodness, I didn't realize it took this long. Because, you know, we all video. But I wanted to make sure I covered a lot of bases. And the basis of this developmental league, I know a lot of people talk about spring and playing at a different time, but it really will only work if it's being played at the same time and nearby cities where you already have that built-in fan base. So let's say, for instance, if we're talking Minnesota and the team is in Minneapolis, let's put that team maybe in, I guess, what, St. Cloud or Duluth is where I put the Minnesota squad, somewhere where people can get to and also where those players can train at the facility, because that's the other part too. Our owners want to make money, and it's about how can they control costs. Well, you have this team, which you already have on your roster, you know, as we go into detail how the roster was set up, you have these teams that are training at your current facility. You know, they just play their games maybe 30 minutes down the road at in Duluth or something like that. So I think having it to where, you know, the team could be the same team colors, or you can get creative if you want to do like different colors or what have you, but you want to keep the team close. And this is how it's set up. You know, you could have, I always said the NFL can expand by eight. There's that much talent out there to have eight more franchises. That way they can expand more out west. So you have more West Coast games, you know. But I think in order for this to work, each team would be set up like the D-League. Each team would have their own minor league team, so to speak, where these guys are staying in football shape. They're playing under the same system or scheme that the team is playing with. They play on a Wednesday, so therefore, if somebody has to get called up or if you need someone in a pinch, they're in game shape. It's early enough in the week to where they can rest to where they can play on Sunday. And that way you have someone nearby. You don't have to really fly nobody in. It keeps everything cost-effective. Guys are still within the scheme. That way the coach can feel more comfortable putting this guy out there on short week's notice because he's doing the same things in the NFL D-League, so to speak. And it just makes – I think it would create more jobs for players, coaches, scouts, analysts like ourselves. You know, I just think it's a great thing. And the NFL can make this happen because they technically are already doing it by going to camp with 90 guys on the roster.
Pro Football Talk actually put out an article that was saying the only way the players would get a better deal in the next, you know, CBA negotiations if they were willing to miss games. And so that kind of got me thinking a little bit with the context of your article. Would it make the most sense or be most beneficial for the players to have this developmental league set up by the NFL? Or would it make more sense for that league to be set up and controlled by the players in the NFLPA?
I think it has to be both because, you know, players, let's say the Players Association will want to make sure, you know, players are being compensated fairly. The NFL, if you leave it up to them, they can dangle out that carrot like, hey, you have a chance at the NFL. We don't have to pay you anything, right? So you need both. And I think in order for it to work, that's what will have to happen. Both sides will have to come to the table and really set up a nice little pay scale. And to be honest, whatever those guys get on practice squad, that's what you would pay those guys that are playing in this G League or D League, so to speak. So that way you keep costs down. That way you have guys getting a livable salary or a livable wage. And also guys are staying football ready, because I know a lot of people say, hey, go to Canada or go play an arena league or something like that. But you don't get better by playing the 11-on-11 game other than playing the 11-on-11 game.
And one of the things that I know after you post your article, because you did mention the CFL, I was curious or wondering why you didn't expand or put any expansion teams in Canada or in that market or in Toronto or something like that. Could you explain why you opted against doing that in the layout that you put forth in your article?
Simple, man. It was out of respect for the CFL, quite honestly, you know, because I do cover the CFL and they're great fans up there, great people. The CFL is super laid back, real nice. And I know they love that motto, this is our game. And you know, it would be wrong to infringe on that and put a team in Canada. Plus, when you put a team in Canada, you have to really reconfigure these stadiums that are already configured for Canadian football. You know, that field is a little bit wider, a little bit bigger, and it will look weird to have an American team playing in a CFL stadium. So, you know, you really have to recreate, and that would, again, cost money, and that's something that owners would not be willing to do. I would rather them go overseas and start fresh there as opposed to trying to expand or put a minor league team in Canada. Now, if they were to expand in the NFL, like, let's say expand eight teams, then, yeah, you look at a place like Vancouver, you look at a place like Edmonton or Alberta, that area, because, again, you want to expand more west. We have way too many teams in the Eastern and Central time zone. They need more teams in the Mountain and Pacific time zone. So I would look at, even if you expand, like I said, in Canada, Vancouver, Alberta, those places would be best to put an NFL franchise.
That is awesome. Well, this is a Vikings-focused podcast, so we definitely want to get into some of the Vikings talk. And during the draft season, which is when you do a ton of work over at Football Game Plan, you did a mock draft in terms of what you would target or how you would go about fixing the Vikings via the draft. Obviously, the draft plays out a little bit differently when it happens, but what are your thoughts on the Vikings offseason so far and how they were able to improve the team via free agency in the draft?
You know what? I like what the Vikings did, man. And, you know, when we do our draft grades and things of that nature, we tend to we include the undrafted free agents because that is a part of the class, right? And I thought top to bottom, I thought the Vikings did a great job. Dalvin Cook is an awesome talent. I think he's a day one starter. Bucky Hodges is a guy that's going to see some time and be a move piece within an offense. You also look at Rodney Adams. I've seen him play live with South Florida. I think he has tremendous speed and quickness. He probably is going to be a starter already in a return game because he has that explosive speed. Elfling, the lineman from Ohio State, can play center or guard. You know, so I thought they did well. I was a big fan of Elijah Lee. Caleb Kidder is a guy they got from Montana, undrafted guy that has a chance. So the Vikings did a great job. I thought Jahlil Johnson, another solid run defender. So they got better. They added depth. They got better. But I really thought they hit a home run with Dalvin Cook. I'm surprised he fell that far.
And for you kind of going in pre-draft, how did you have Joe Mixon rated versus Dalvin Cook?
Oh, that's a great question because I thought Mixon is an okay player, you know, a good player, but he's not that dynamic talent. And I know when I look at Mixon, and it's funny because he went to a team that I thought was perfect for him because – to me, he's a bigger version of Gio Bernard. You know, he's a guy that can do all things Gio Bernard can do and some of the things that he can't do. Like, these guys don't run through arm tackles. These guys don't play physical. Despite him being 6'1", 225, he plays like a smaller guy. I don't think he has a natural run instincts like his teammate who I had rated slightly higher in Samaje Perine. I think Mixon plays the running back position like Ty Montgomery plays the running back position. And Ty Montgomery plays position like a wide receiver that plays running back, you know. So it's just I think that's the difference between Mixon and a guy like P. Ryan. So I wasn't as high on Mixon as most. He's a terrific player. He's in a perfect spot. But I think when you look at Cook has the home run hitting speed, the guy that's going to probably, given the football, he can be that 1,500 to 1,600-yard rusher.
So, Yinka, hearing this from Emery, since Joe Mixon was your guy, what are your thoughts on that take?
I mean, some of the criticism as far as Joe Mixon, I think one of the biggest ones is how often he would get stopped in the backfield. So I guess I understand where, you know, some people wouldn't be as high as him. You know, there is an expectation with running backs where, you know, there's obviously need to be able to move the ball, advance the ball, more so than they're getting stopped in the backfield. So, you know, that can obviously speak to Joe Mixon not necessarily having the greatest top end speed, but I did see more explosion when I watched him on tape as far as being able to break tackles. You know, kind of having that, he didn't have that ankle breaking shiftiness, but I think some of the reminiscence of, you know, old Adrian Peterson in his prime. He just had a level of force and violence with his run style, which is why I was so attracted to Joe Mixon. So I still felt like he had enough explosion for him to, you know, score both in the both as a running back position and obviously when he flexed out as a wide receiver.
And I would be remiss if I didn't call out that Emery did mention my guy, Mr. Bucky Hodges. I think that going into draft season, Football Game Plan had Bucky as the number two joker tight end after David Njoku, who went in the first round to the Browns. And I recently wrote a silly piece for Climbing the Pocket, basically outlining why Bucky Hodges was the player that Vikings fans should be most excited about, because if he was to combine his athletic talents and really put it all together, he could be a special player for the Vikings. So since you brought him up, Emery, I'd like you to tell me, am I off base with my thoughts on kind of what Bucky's, I guess, ceiling could be for the Vikings if he's able to kind of put it all together and refine his blocking and route running a bit? And what were your thoughts on him as a player kind of pre-draft when you were scouting him coming out?
Well, when I look at Hodges, I think that, you know, he's a guy that he plays the game like Marcus Colson. You know, he's a bigger wide receiver, but really a diet tight end, so to speak, right? You know, Marcus Colson was a wide receiver in name only, but really ran like a tight end. You know, then as toward the end of his career, Saints sort of put him inside like a tight end. And I think you can get that out of Bucky Hodges. I don't think he's explosive or dynamic enough to be on the outside, but that's okay. He can play on the outside in certain situations, like in the red zone or things of that nature. He does a good job of attacking the football. He's willing to sacrifice for passes, but he's just another piece of the puzzle. And when you look at the Vikings offense already, I'm a big fan of David Morgan. You know, Rudolph is a solid tight end, really good receivers in Tretwell, Diggs, Thielen, you know, Jarius Wright. I just think that the Vikings have a ton of talent on the perimeter. They're stacked with talent. So when you get a guy like Hodges, now you're able to get creative. You're Pat Shurmur. Let's say you want to go to an all-big lineup. Now you have Hodges, you have Rudolph, Tretwell. You know, you can bring in Morgan in the backfield, one back, and then run the football. So, or you can still be in a run-look formation with personnel, and now you're still able to get deep down the field because you have a guy like Hodges that can essentially play both. So having a guy that's really that joker type does give you that flexibility, and which is why it's very tough. If you got one tight end, you're hard to defend. But if you have two, you're damn near impossible to defend.
That is awesome. That is what I like to hear. But you did definitely, you mentioned some names there, and I think that you probably saw Yinka give you a little fist pump there, because Yinka is the president of the Jarius Wright fan club. And you also mentioned Laquan Treadwell, who's a player that I was probably more down on than my co-host pre-draft. But he's a player that has shown very well in what we've seen from Vikings camp thus far. From your perspective, give me, I guess, the reasons why we should be, you know, excited about Laquan Treadwell going into this next season. And I guess your case for why Jarius Wright should be someone who sticks around on the Vikings roster.
Well, first, when you look at Treadwell, he has the ability to go up and get the football. Again, he may not be the most dynamic. His route running may not be what it should be. People probably thought he was Dez Bryant, but he's not Dez Bryant. I think he's more of a active version of Justin Blackmon, you know. And so he still can catch the football. He can attack the football. I like that about him. He catches the ball with his hands. I don't care how fast you run. If you're able to catch the ball with your hands as a receiver, I want you on my team. I could win. I could beat you with a team full of slow receivers with great hands, as opposed to fast guys like, since we're doing the Vikings podcast, a fast guy like, what's the guy y'all drafted from South Carolina that just ran the one slant and that was supposed to replace Randy Moss?
Troy Williamson.
Exactly.
We don't talk about him around here, though.
But I could win with a guy like Treadwell. And for Jarius Wright, the reason why I like Wright and I like receivers of Wright's caliber is because they can beat press without even touching them. You know what I'm saying? They can beat tight coverage without you even getting a hand on them. So if you're able to beat a defender and get him to open up his hips within the first two steps, and he didn't even lay a hand on you, or you didn't have to fight to get his hands off of you, you won already. That's why I never bought the thought out there that people think Tavon Austin is not good. Like, no way. They just don't have a quarterback. So when you look at a guy like Jarius Wright, now you bring him, and I'm big on putting big guys on the inside, small guys on the outside. People will try to pigeonhole Wright and put him in the slot. No, you want to put a guy like Wright on the outside with those big guys on the inside, because let's say you run Bucky Hodges down the seam, right? With his height and his ability to go up and get the ball, he's going to draw that safety. Now you have a guy that's basically in the 100-meter dash on the outside, and Wright, he beats you off the snap. It's a house call because now you just toss that ball up. He runs underneath it. So I like his burst. I like his quickness. I think that's where he needs to be utilized in order for this Vikings to, you know, offense to really take flight.
Yinka, did you and Emery just become best friends?
I mean, obviously, he's obviously pointing out a lot of the stuff, same things. You know how I feel about people constantly pigeonholing smaller guys, smaller wide receivers in the slot. I hate it. I think you should see more of the bigger guys, like someone like a Laquon Treadle, moving him into the slot, because it's not only just about the quickness and speed and burst to be able to get off the line. It's also, again, like you can find some mismatches with some bigger guys. Larry Fitzgerald, that's why they started putting him in the slot. You can find some mismatches by putting those bigger guys on the inside and putting some wide receivers on the outside. I think the NFL is morphing the way that we are seeing, prototypical offense in the way that everyone thinks, oh, small guy slot, big guy outside. So I definitely agree with that take.
Well, that's because size is not a skill, man, and people constantly mess that up. And I always say this on no matter whether it's a video or TV or radio or podcast, I always use this example. Imagine if Barry Sanders played nowadays. They would not give him the ball. They would say, oh, he's just a scat back. We bring him in on third downs. Let's toss him a screen. No. You know, just because he's short doesn't mean he can't ball. And when you look at a guy like Steve Smith, you know, if Steve Smith would have came out now, they probably would put him in the slot. But he won on the outside. He won above the rim. He played like he was 6'5". And juxtaposed to a guy like Stephen Hill or Martavis Bryant, they play small despite them being 6'3", 6'4", 6'5".
So if it was you kind of designing the optimal Vikings offense with the pieces that we have, because I agree, I think we have some great skill players really across the board in all the skill position groups on offense. What would that optimal Vikings offense look like if you were designing it, Emery?
Three wide receivers, one tight end, one back, no fullback. The only reason why I would use it, the only way I'd use a fullback is if you had the ability to catch the football. You better be Larry Sanders. You better be Tom Rathman. You better be guys that can really get down the field and make something happen. And you better be a threat, because that's what it's about. You got five offensive linemen, you got a quarterback. Those other guys have to be threats. That's what made those Niner teams of the 80s dangerous. They're out there with Jerry Rice, John Taylor, Brent Jones, Roger Craig, and Tom Rathman. All those guys were threats. You know, so if I'm designing this Vikings offense, right now it'll be Diggs, Treadwell, and you rotate between Thielen and Wright. I would have never got rid of Cordero Patterson because he's dangerous with the ball in his hands. You figure out a way to get him open and get him the football because of what he could do after the catch. So that's a big loss for me for this Vikings team, because they built exactly what you want. You had Treadwell, Diggs, and you had Patterson, but you can get something between Thielen and Wright, depending on what play you're trying to work within the offense. Then it will be Cook in the backfield with either Rudolph, Bucky Hodges in the stand-up position, so it may look like a four-wide receiver set, but we're really in three wides in the tight end. There's so much you can do. There's so much I would do, but it will start by not putting the fullback on the field because you want to maximize the amount of threats you can have out there, and the Vikings right now definitely have those playmakers.
So with the playmakers that we have, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, you mentioned the quarterback situation for the Vikings. So we have, obviously, Sam Bradford, another contract year for him coming in, Teddy Bridgewater coming back from injury. If it were you, how would you, kind of in a perfect world, handle this quarterback situation that we have going on? Are you signing Bradford to a long-term deal? Are you holding out to see how Teddy returns? What would be your take, and kind of how did you evaluate those two players coming out, and kind of how do you see them now that they've had some time in the league?
I think the Vikings are doing a good job in letting this situation play out, not because they are shortchanging Teddy. You want to make sure he is back at 100%, because we've seen what that looked like. You know, it looks like that's a playoff team. And if homeboy makes that kick, I think the Vikings actually go into Carolina and beat Carolina. I thought they were a better team than that Panthers team in the playoffs, you know, more so than Seattle. So I thought that was a Vikings chance to make that run, which is why everybody had that optimism coming into last season. Like, you know what? Vikings got an opportunity to make the Super Bowl, which is true with Teddy Bridgewater, because he has the it factor that Bradford doesn't have. So if I'm the Vikings, I'm playing it the right way, making sure he's back healthy 100%. Take your time. We saw what happened when RG3 tried to rush back. I think that ruined him more than anything. They shouldn't have drafted a guy in the same draft to be his backup, knowing they were already planting the seeds to replace him, and he ended up forcing this guy to come back and he wasn't 100%, because he is clearly a better passer and a better player than Kirk Cousins. And I feel the same way about Teddy Bridgewater. With Sam Bradford, we've seen Bradford at his best, which was the last season in Philadelphia, which was the second to last season, I believe, in St. Louis when he got hurt. He was playing some great ball. Even as a rookie, man, Sam Bradford jumped in and had the Rams on the brink of the playoffs. All they had to do was win that last game, I believe, against San Francisco, but he threw an interception on the goal line. Again, we've seen him at his best, and we haven't seen him in the playoffs. We've seen him go 7-9 or 8-8 or something like that. I think that's his – that's where he's going to take this team. So you can go 7-9 one more season. I know Vikings fans may not want to hear it, but 7-9, 8-8 is probably the best they could hope for with Bradford. But at least it gives Teddy Bridgewater time to get back healthy 100% where he trusts that knee. So when he does get back out there, you guys have a Super Bowl-ready team that can just hit the ground running. Don't rush Teddy back. Teddy is the Vikings quarterback.
And even with the weapons, I guess, if you were looking at, you know, Sam Bradford and kind of comparing him to some other, I guess, what we call middle-of-the-road type quarterbacks and – you know, maybe an Andy Dalton or even a guy like a Kirk Cousins who was in the news today because they weren't able to work out a long-term deal with him and the Redskins. Like, where do you put Sam Bradford in that category? And are there enough weapons that the Vikings have put around Sam where maybe they can, you know, elevate him and kind of help his performance out if he plays at a similar level that he played last year or even in Philadelphia?
They can. I mean, we've seen it happen. We've seen it work for other teams. We saw it work for the Dolphins. Once he decides to take the ball out of Ryan Tannehill's hand and put it in the belly of a running back and keep him on a pitch count, you know, like, hey, Tannehill, we're going to actually throw 17 passes a game. Perfect. You know, therefore, you're not exposing him to screwing the game up. And that's what you have to do when you have a quarterback that doesn't have that quote-unquote it factor, which you see with Kansas City, which you see with, team we just mentioned, Miami, which you see with – certain teams out there where their quarterback, you know, doesn't have that he can't go win you a game. And Bradford is that type of guy. He can play complimentary football, but everything else around that has to be perfect. Like, it was a perfect storm for Miami. I mean, the running game clicked. The offensive line was finally healthy. They opened up holes. You know, defense got better as the season went on, and they got into the playoffs. But ultimately, the game – your quarterback, because think you got to look at it this way. When you get into the playoffs, all the teams are good. All the defenses are good. And so they're going to take away what you do well, and it's going to force other areas of your team to step up. And if your quarterback can't come through, if he can't hit those free throws against the Houston Rockets, you know, like Nick Anderson, then you're going to lose, you know, and that's what's going to happen. You know, so I would – if I'm a coach, I would hate to have – that type of situation where I know for a fact my quarterback won't be the one to get me where I need to be. So I got to protect him, because at some point when you least expect it, you're going to need him come through, and he won't.
And so you mentioned the it factor a couple of times, and I know that that's something that can become contentious because, you know, how do you measure it or how do you really see it? Is that something that someone can get better at with time, or is that, do you think, something that's innate, that either you have it or you don't, and it's something that you're born with?
I think it's something you're born with, because that's like asking someone or saying to someone, I can make you tougher. Like, no, you can't. Either you have it or you don't. I can't make you tough. I can't make you better. You know what I'm saying? I can't make you something that you're not. And it's not a bad thing. You know, some people clam up. I'm pretty sure Nick Anderson hit every free throw in practice. But when the game is on the line, when the pressure of the situation was at its highest, he failed. And there's a big deal in sports psychology. And, you know, I studied a lot upon that, you know, that people genuinely clam up in pressure situations. Those that are able to remain calm are usually able to think clearly and come to find a solution, whether that's striking out someone on the full count in the bottom of the ninth, you know, bases loaded. Some people clam up. Some people give up that hit. Other guys can really, you know, zero in, focus, and knock it out. Think about Aaron Rodgers on that pass against the Cowboys. Had all that momentum. That led them to what looked to be a victory, and only the most precise, accurate pass in the history of football was going to beat the Cowboys, and Aaron Rodgers made that throw. You know, and he could have easily sacked himself or threw the ball away or stumbled or fell He didn't. He remained calm and was able to fire the ball where it needed to be to make the play. That's the type of it factor that you want to see from somebody. Even it's funny because people think it's all about skills and the arm and stuff like that. But let's take a look at a guy that people consistently knock, but all he did was have success. Two people, actually. You have Tim Tebow and you have Kellen Moore. You know, when you had Tebow with the Broncos, I've never seen someone try to sabotage a player more so than the Broncos. They called, especially against Kansas City, they called two pass plays in the first half. So you try not to let this man throw the ball, and then when you need him to throw, you act, oh, he can't make the passes. Well, of course, he's ice cold throwing the ball. But when he needed to make those throws in the fourth quarter, he throws a dime for the game-winning touchdown to Eric Decker to beat Kansas City. So you see it in the playoff game against Pittsburgh. For Kellen Moore, you saw it against Virginia Tech. Kellen Moore looks like someone that shouldn't even be out there, right? It looks like he still has a 10th grade body. So he's out there. He's flimsy. He looks like he gets pushed around. But against Virginia Tech, I guess it was at RFK or FedEx, he marches down the field and knocks off the ACC opponent. Ice water in his veins. Those are the type of guys you could win with. It's not about the talent. It's about what you have inside when the game is online. Can I win with you? And a lot of guys have talent, but they don't have that it factor. I mean, think about it. Alex Smith is a tremendous athlete. He can beat you with his arm. He can beat you on the ground, but he's shell-shocked. He doesn't have that clutchness in his body to where he can – he's not a – you know how they say you scared money don't make none? So when you look at him, the reason why you could win a fight is because I'm not afraid to lose the fight. So – Alex Smith plays like he's afraid to lose a game. You're never going to win the game with that type of mentality.
And it's funny because, like, Alex Smith, you know, Sam Bradford, one of the things that they do have in common, and it's commentary that I've heard about both guys while listening to games, is that maybe they're too smart, and sometimes they get in their own heads when, you know, the situation does get big, or maybe they think too much when the game is on the line versus just kind of letting it all hang out and letting it go. When you do need that big play, they play maybe a little too cautious or start to doubt or question, and those things kind of are what lead to the ultimate, you know, demise or bad play or crazy interception that'll cost you a game there towards the end. Well, that's pretty much what we had. You know, you gave us your takes on Sam and Teddy. You gave us the state of the Vikings. I guess, what are you working on over there at Football Game Plan? I know that you guys basically cover every kind of football there is, I think, from D3 up through the NFL and even the CFL. I guess, what do you guys have cooking for us now as training camps and everything are about to get kicked off?
Well, we're going to start rolling out our NFL season previews. It's so funny because tomorrow I'm actually going to be flying out to Salt Lake City because I'll be the color commentator on the IWFL Women's Tackle Football Championship game, which takes place. So I got to go out there and do all the stuff preparing for the week's game. So we're doing a little bit of everything. So the next major thing is coming down the pike. I'll tweet out the links where people can watch the game, stream the game live. That championship game is going to be awesome. But our NFL season previews will come out starting the following week. So that week of the 24th, I believe. So that's what's coming out next. All our FCS season previews are out. And if you want to check those out, each conference we put in about 7 draft prospects to keep an eye on. So therefore you have what, 13 conferences, you know, you do the math. I can't do it right now, but that stuff right there, you have over what, 200 something prospects that you could check out and get prepped for the season. Not 200, like 80 something. So that you can get ready for the season in the FCS. And there's a ton of talent there and just prepping toward our, you know, to kick off the season. So NFL season previews is coming down the pipe.
That's awesome. And are those going to be on the YouTube channel, or are we going to find those on footballgameplan.com?
Both. They will be uploaded to YouTube first, then they're backlogged on footballgameplan.com. And we're also putting out podcasts to complement the videos. So our season previews probably run about 8 to 10 minutes, but then we'll have a podcast where we bring in the Football Game Plan crew and really break down the team and get some other opinions instead of hearing my silly opinion about the teams. You get our guys' opinion. I wanted to bring those guys more involved in what we got going on this year too.
Well, that is awesome, man. Well, Emery, that's pretty much all I got for you. Yinka, I guess, do you have any parting words for Emery? I mean, he basically came here and told you that all of the football takes that you have had since we started the podcast were 100% correct, and that all of the players you love are the players that you should love. So I don't know if you need to go ahead and wire him the money now or what, but I guess, did you have anything you wanted to say to Emery before we get him out of here?
Yeah, just send me your email so I can send the through PayPal and all the other stuff. But no, I appreciate Emery. I spent a lot of my time watching tape and stuff, and you know, there are time more complicated stuff I'm not always able to necessarily put to words all the time. But you said a lot of the things that I do see when I watch tape, and I've said them, but I think hearing it from you definitely kind of more solidifies what I'm seeing. So. Again, I appreciate the takes and your thoughts on everything.
Anytime, man. And my only piece of advice for everybody is always trust what you see. Your eyes will never lie to you. You know, always trust what you see. People that, like, a lot of people that, you know, you hear, like, I like to call them big media. You hear big media try to say, like, oh, you know, it's really tough, it's detailed, that you don't know. Like, dude, listen, you know, it's not that hard. Football is an easy game. And if you trust what you see, you're going to be right 9.5 times out of 10.
That is awesome advice. And Emery, once again, thank you for coming on the Climbing the Pocket podcast with us tonight. And yeah, have a good night, man.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that, man. Y'all keep chopping wood. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Have a good night.
Have a good night, man.
You too.
All right, y'all. Well, we are back from our chat with Emery Hunt from Football Game Plan. Emery is awesome. Very, very smart guy. Knows, probably watched more film this past year than most of us have watched over the course of our entire lives. It was great to have him come on, talk Vikings, tell us why everything Yink has been saying has been correct, but also that everything that I've been saying about Mr. Bucky Hodges is also correct. So we'll have to get Emery back on so he can continue to tell us how wonderful and how smart we are with our Vikings takes. But Yinka, I guess, what do you got in the hopper? What upcoming projects you got going on for us, man?
Yeah, I'm still doing my Death Chart series. I believe the offensive line should drop tomorrow. I'm trying to complete that fully by the time training camp starts. But I'm gonna have a lot of content coming out once training camp starts. I will be at the night practice. I'll be there like all day, so I'll be trying to interview players and, you know, just getting some, you know, some of the under the radar guys that I've wanted to talk to, as well as some other guys who, you know, have a lot to prove this season. So I'll be trying to hit up as many people as I can to, you know, just get a couple words, you know, what they've been working on, what their mentality is like, and where they feel they're at this early in the off season.
Well, that's awesome. We'll definitely be looking forward to that. And I guess, you know, JR decided to stick around for the dessert this evening, so we won't be hearing from him tonight. So with that, I want to thank you for listening to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And we'll be back with you guys in a couple of days here. Have a good one.